Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Wedding 101 Radio Show. It's a weekly radio blog broadcast throughout our website, drsmusic.com. The radio show is designed to be a helpful resource for both brides and grooms as well as wedding professionals. It will give listeners real insights from the very top professional wedding vendors in the nation. Each week we'll feature new wedding professionals from a variety of different wedding planning aspects, photographers, caterers, wedding planners, florists, venues, marketers, and many more. These interviews will give lots of great ideas about how to get the best results for your wedding. Wedding vendors can also learn from fellow professionals. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic, please let us know. We hope you enjoy the show. So let's move. Our guest for this week is from Food for Thought Catering. His name is John Rudy. And John is a graduate of Michigan State University and the Culinary School of America, Institute of America. Mr. Rudy is one of the go-to people in the special events industry in Chicago with over 20 years of experience. John's experience with Marriott provided him the tools to play a prominent role in growing Food for Thought into one of Chicago's elite special event companies. Founding his own consulting company, he has helped guide some of the city's most foremost caterers and special event companies to new heights of success during turbulent times, which you've certainly experienced recently. John has now returned to Food for Thought, where he has served as the Vice President of Catering. Welcome, John.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me.
And as always, we are joined by our fabulous marketing guru, Ilana Green. Say hello, Ilana.
Hello.
Ilana, hello. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, John. Heard a lot of great things. Looking forward.
One of the most important aspects, besides music, of course, is the catering. And today we're going to talk about some different things that brides should be looking for, and John's going to give some great tips about getting the best catering results for your wedding. So let's kind of get started. And first thing I'd like to know is, what do you love most about catering weddings?
Well, you know, because I've been in the business for so long and I manage the entire business, I don't get involved as intimately with weddings anymore. But when I did, it was the relationship you develop with the family that was really the most rewarding. You know, each one was different and special in its own way, as everybody kind of has their own dream and their own vision for that day. So, you know, us and myself playing a role in planning a day that was shared by so many people to celebrate something that was so special is really, you know, what I love most about catering weddings. And I found that the folks on the staff that have that same perspective are really the people on staff that are the most successful, since we work with budgets of all types. And just because one budget is larger than another, it doesn't mean it's more rewarding. So really, everybody that works here that comes from that perspective, you know, embraces the weddings, and that's why we love it the most. You don't often get to be involved with something as intimate as and special as a wedding. So.
And since weddings are generally filled with a lot of very expensive things that brides and grooms have never bought before, what are the most important things that that brides should really take into consideration when reviewing different types of caterers?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I work in the off-premise sector, meaning, you know, we're a fancy roadshow. We go to anywhere you want us to go and, you know, develop your wedding for you on that particular day. The costs are a little bit more complicated than if you would go to a hotel. You kind of have a package that you can choose from, and they have everything that you need. They have the tables, they have the chairs to a large degree. They have the linens and the flatware and the china, and your options when you first get in there, you know, are right there for you. When you come to someone like ourselves, you know, your options are endless, and how your budget breaks out, you know, depends on what's most important to you. So I think the thing for brides to, before they come and work with off-premise caterers, is understand, you know, how their budget's going to be broken down and make those decisions of where they want to spend their money. So, for instance, food really only accounts for about 40 cents out of every dollar that they spend with their caterer. Certainly it's a big margin, but it's less than half. So is food the most important thing to the bride? That's a question that they have to ask themselves. You know, staffing is 25, 26, 27, 28% of every dollar that gets spent. So, you know, how does that impact what the bride envisions for her day? You know, the linens are around 5%, and the rentals actually are 25%, which between the rentals and linens, 30% of your budget is almost as much as the food, and that's giving you the visual of when you walk in the room, what your room's going to look like. So it's really important for the bride to pinpoint what's going to be most important for her in that particular day so that they can maximize that portion of the budget. And then, obviously, when working with the caterer can help lead them in the right direction. So whether it's the tabletop, the china is important, or the tablecloths, or so on and so on and so on. So it is a lot more complicated working with an off-premise caterer, but I think it's more fun in the ability to customize and really express yourself in a special way is there for you, where maybe it's not if you go to a hotel or a restaurant or something like that.
And I've worked with you guys a number of times, and I know you have a wide variety of different types of menu items for Jewish events, for Italian families, Irish families, so that you can really adapt things to the number of guests they have, their ethnicity, the style of wedding they have. And that's the real advantage of working with a larger company like Food for Thought, is that they've done so many different types of weddings. They can really adapt to what you specifically need and have a much more a varied menu. And I've also, you know, sometimes you have combinations of different cultures too, and that ability to have the finesse of being able to have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and blend them beautifully together into something that's delicious for everybody.
It is a benefit of working for a company that's a little bit larger. You think of the word boutique, and you think the smaller caterer that you work with, the better service, the more boutique service experience you're going to have. And sometimes it's just the opposite. Some of the bigger caterers like ourselves, we just have a few more resources. So even though you may fall in love with your salesperson, which is probably one of the most important things you can do when you're choosing caterers, like and trust and respect the person that's leading you through the process. But that person obviously doesn't know everything. So when you come here, the salespeople here have the option of consulting, you know, up to 15 different people here, not including myself and some other people that have experiences that range from, like you said, David, Jewish events, Indian events. Some of the salespeople, you know, aesthetically have just amazing taste and are great with tabletop. Other salespeople come from culinary backgrounds, and they can really help a client with develop a menu and create those nuances that they may want in conjunction with the chef. So you're absolutely right. So when you do work with a company that's a little bit bigger, the resources you're provided, you know, go up exponentially.
Thanks, John, for that insight. It's interesting, especially about different cultures and, you know, fitting unique styles. With that said, how has catering wedding changed in the past 5 to 10 years, given there's more diversity within weddings? We just know, you know, recently it doesn't seem, or I don't even know if that's a correct trend or not, but it seems as though, you know, there has been a lot of changes. Do you see that in your business specifically?
You know, it's funny. That's a funny question. One of the things I love about...
Yeah, it is a funny question, isn't it?
It is a funny question, because one of the reasons I love this business the most is because what we inherently do, since I've been doing it for a long time, doesn't change. We buy the food, we prep the food, we transport the food, we cook the food, we serve the food, we clean it up, and we kind of come home. You know, it's kind of like that old baseball thing. You throw the ball, you catch the ball, you hit the ball. Inherently, what we do hasn't changed, and I don't see it changing. I find that kind of refreshing, that you have to be really good at what you do. And unlike technology, where everything you bought yesterday is completely out of date tomorrow and it's going to change and we have to refigure out the wheel, it doesn't happen that way. So that's kind of nice. You know, that being said, technology's really transformed the way that we communicate, and obviously that's had a huge impact on our industry. So everybody expects things faster and faster, yet what we do hasn't really initially changed. So custom and last minute, you know, in most industries equals increased costs and price, yet the customer doesn't always seem to understand this in catering. They could just call and say, okay, yeah, we need to make this change today and just make it happen. And tomorrow, well, you know, we still have to buy the food, prep the food, cook the food, transport the food, serve the food. And it's not like some other industries where you can snap your fingers and make things happen. So this has a big impact on weddings because weddings are so emotional. And when those changes happen at the last minute, you know, we really have to take the stress out of that, make them understand that it's no problem, we'll make it happen, and not emphasize what it's going to cost, because it does come as in these increased costs. So I think other changes that you've seen is lead times at weddings are less and less every year. There's more second marriages that don't involve long engagements. So, you know, we do a ton of weddings that are planned only 3, 4, 5, 6 months out. More people are eloping and having a reception when they return, and those lead times are really short. So we find that if a bride doesn't really have her heart set on that one perfect venue where there's a waiting list, there are so many alternative venues to choose from that that weren't available in the past, that a bride and a groom can really get something planned, you know, relatively quickly, where in the old days, you know, David and I are old guys, you know, we're used to what? 2 years, 18 months, 12 months was like a quick planning time, and now 12 months, that's plenty of time.
Exactly. You know, and one of the things that you had alluded to was really the speed of life now, and people's expectations, where, you know, you send a text, and if someone doesn't get back to you in 2 minutes, you're like, oh, my God, what's right. going on? And, you know, we're just overly stimulated. You know, we've got more Starbucks in every corner, and we just, you know, we don't realize. We take all this stuff for granted. So now people's expectations are much, much higher in every wedding industry. And certainly when people request a very complicated song 2 days before the wedding, there are things that it's not a DJ where you just download a thing. We have to actually get the arrangement done, write it all out, get the musicians to learn stuff. And the same thing with catering, where we're happy to, you know, always do accommodate things as much as we can, but a lot of it is, brides really don't, they've never done this before, and they've been to weddings, but they may not realize what actually goes into adding, you know, going all vegetarian or adding more vegetarian meals or changing this ingredient or changing that at the last minute. And it's the people that can be nimble enough to be able to adjust to those last minute changes are the ones that are really having the most success. And that's one of the big reasons I always enjoy working with Food for Thought, because they're always right on top of their game and do a great job of that. To me, you know, one of the biggest things in terms of the success of a wedding is the speed of serving the meal. And I've had, as well as having lengthy toasts, and I know you can't really control somebody's father the bride toast, but when it comes to caterers, I've worked with some that it does take much, much longer. And what it does is it can really slow down the momentum of a wedding. And to me, that's the most important word for a great wedding, is momentum. So how do you determine the number of servers you include? Is it based on the number of guests, the schedule, the venue, the client's budget, or is it really something else? Because I think that's a really important thing in terms of the flow of the wedding. When this goes into that and the food is going here and now it's, you know, we have an exact time when the food's going to be coming out, it dramatically affects positively or negatively on the flow of the wedding.
So I will say yes, yes, and yes. all those things impact how many servers you need. It's funny that you said you really can't control the toasts and how long they go. And it's funny, there's a funny story that happened last year, is that the bride was, she was terrified that both the brother and the dad we're just going to go on forever and ever and ever. Some people are just terrified that their dad or their brother is going to say something inappropriate. In this case, it wasn't really that. It was just that they were going to drone on and she wasn't going to be able to control it. And so we said, you know what? We can help them if you like. You know, we've got some, you know, in helping the salespeople and training and things like that. You know, we've got some outlines that you can use that are perfectly suited for giving a wedding toast or a toast to honor somebody or things like that, and it's like foolproof. You you can give it to your brother or your dad and show it to them, and it'll help them put their thoughts together, and I swear to God, they won't go on and on and on. They'll plug in what they want to think, say, and it'll go right through. And she said, really, give it to me. They're not going to use it, but we'll do it anyways. And we gave them the outline, and the brother and dad were not public speakers. They said, this is great. This is what we're looking for, because we would have gotten up there and fumbled all over ourselves and written things down. And they used it, and they were all done in 2.5 minutes. And they were really, it was super heartfelt. The bride was so happy, and you know,
it's great.
Everything got through really quick. So that's a funny story that I didn't plan on saying. But when you said you can't really,
I love it. Yeah, that's. I'll have to get a copy of that.
We did control
everybody
the toast.
Everybody can relate to a brother or dad embarrassing them. So that's funny.
Exactly, it's funny. But to answer your question, it all depends on how many courses are being served, what the level of service expectations are, the budget, all those kinds of things. So we try to balance. Are they dancing between courses? Are they dancing between courses? Is it just three courses? First course, entree, dessert. Is the dessert going to be served from a buffet rather than served at the table, so it cuts it down to two courses? Do they want the salad preset? So there's all the number of different things that go in to deciding exactly how much staff we're going to have. You know, typically for the bartenders, you know, we like to have, you know, one bartender for every 35 guests or so. So for, you know, a party of 100 to 125, we like to have, you know, about three bartenders. It sounds excessive. But it's really not. 60% of the drinking goes on in the first hour. So you really need to make sure there's no lines and everybody's taken care of in the first hour. And then you can move that waiter or that bartender to be a waiter the rest of the night. And then the staff, you know, we usually look at the area of, you know, 12, for every 12 to 15 guests for a plated dinner, you know, something that's relatively straightforward, three courses. Is a benchmark we use, and then it goes down from there. And we had something recently where the bride wanted everybody to order their salad, their first course at the table. They wanted to order their entree at the table, and they wanted to order dessert at the table. We didn't know what they were going to order until that night. You know, well, then the waiters, you know, we had one for every, I think it was one for every six people because of the service that was involved and taking orders and all those kinds of things. But that's, you know, that's kind of the exception to the rule. But it does kind of show it can be all over the board.
What would you say are the main things that you see brides making over and over again? I know there's a lot of blogs and there's a lot of magazines and there's a lot of other people on Facebook that sometimes don't always give the best advice for catering, and then they come to somebody like you with all this crazy advice and say that, oh, no, I demand this and I demand that, and it's just you want to pull your hair out. What are the mistakes or some of the questions that you're seeing over and over again that you really wish that brides would kind of know the difference so that they understand from a real professional like you as opposed to somebody who kind of dabbles with wedding catering?
Well, hopefully on our end, we can circumvent a lot of it through due diligence and, you know, asking a lot of questions up front so that we can troubleshoot and help them not make the mistakes. Sometimes, you know, it's not always possible, but we try to circumvent it if we can. But the mistakes that we see that happen most of the time is, you know, waiting till the last few weeks to start making decisions, and it just stresses everybody out. All the brides are working. They all have jobs. They all have other things to do. You know, time management is always a concern for all of us, and they're trying to juggle the most important event in their life with, you know, beginning a career and other things going on in their lives. So it's really important that they don't put those decisions off to the last minute. You know, choose your linens, your chair colors, you know, get your menu and your tasting done early, decide on your bar packages, get all those big decisions made ahead of time so that you don't have to stress out, you know, dealing with seating and pop-up issues are going to come up last minute anyway, so don't compound them by not making decisions that, A, are really fun to make, and B, you know, are enable all the people that you work with to make you look good, including yourself, you know, making sure that your songs are selected for the band and all those types of things. So that's one of the big things. I think sometimes the brides take on too much. They try to do too many things themselves, and they don't enjoy the planning process. You know, we really believe that the planning process should be as enjoyable as the night itself. So don't try to tackle too much. You know, we're here to help. Family is always there to help, and sometimes they just try to micromanage everything and get try to do a little bit too much done on their own. And then last, selfishly, we think is a mistake is I think the brides generally worry too much about pleasing the masses, and they stick with really safe choices for dinner. It used to be okay in the past. People weren't adventurous as they used to be. We weren't a foodie culture where everybody talks about where's the last place they ate and what the last thing they ate was and what'd you cook for dinner tonight and all those types of things. And so we see brides in general being scared to make decisions that they would make at a restaurant for their wedding. And I think that we find that when the brides do break out of the box and they do serve something that you'd more likely see in a restaurant that would be quote-unquote, you know, adventurous, the guests are so pleased that they didn't have to sit through the Caesar salad and they didn't have to sit through the chicken and the mashed potatoes or the combination plate with the salmon and the beef. You know, make a decision. Don't put two things on one plate. Put one thing on a plate and make it great, or give the guess a choice beforehand and make it great, and you know, and make it interesting. Have some fun with it. People will not mind if you don't give them mashed potatoes. I swear to God, and they're going to be far happier.
What are some of the interesting kind of bold meals that brides have made that really made a difference? I think it's very fascinating to know that something as big of a deal, but as small of a deal as food, could really change the wedding. So what have you seen as kind of really made the party?
I think that the first course is something that you can be super adventurous with because everybody expects to eat a salad. So there's no law or rule anywhere that says just because it's your wedding, you have to sit down and you have to serve a salad. You know, there's a lot of fun choices that are just as cost-effective, by the way, as a salad. You know, soups are great options, especially when it's cold. Cold soups are a tougher sell, but hot soups, you know, everybody loves a hot soup, and it can be really fun. You can serve it. You can make it part of the show. And just the other day, we served a chowder. It was a chowder, so everybody looked at the menu and said, oh, we're having clam chowder for our first course. That's kind of mundane. But the server came up. They dropped a beautiful wide-rim bowl in front of them. It had three perfectly cut medallions of purple potatoes with some braised pork belly on top of it and some fried celery leaves. And then the next waiter came right behind him and poured this, you know, beautiful clam broth right over the top. Well, it was chowder, but it was chowder that nobody had ever seen before. So it was taking something that people, you know, probably look forward to eating and doing it in a different way and putting a little show on it. And it wasn't something that was really expensive. So I think soups are a great way to go. Cold fish courses are a lovely way to go. I think changing the first course is probably the thing that we see that makes the biggest impact for the rest of the meal. And if you want to play it safe with the center of the plate on the protein, you know, you can play it safe there. But, you know, let us play with the sides with you a little bit, you know. Don't be afraid to serve grits. Don't be afraid to serve, you know, some sort of braised bean stew. Don't be afraid to serve polenta, you know, things that everybody eats now, but for whatever reason, you know, they're afraid to serve at a wedding. But if they saw it on a menu at a restaurant, they would order it in 2 seconds.
What are some of the crazy food requests that you've gotten before where you're kind of scratching your head and, okay, we'll kind of improvise and come up with something to have you had some requests that are like, why would you want to serve that for your wedding, or not really understanding the combinations of certain things, and you've done some innovative work and just gotten creative and come up with something for them?
There is. I think, you know, for the most part, you know, you talked about how things have changed in the last 5 to 10 years. One of the positive things is that people have so much better access to information online about food, and they're reading more about it. So the crazy requests don't stem out of people being uneducated anymore. You know, the crazy requests we welcome because it's usually people asking us to push the envelope. So the requests that really we see happening most of all are stemming from allergies, you know. So over the last 5 to 10 years, the request for gluten-free has gone through the roof. I mean, we never used to see it. And now, you know, there's two or three or four with every wedding, and probably only half of those stem from people actually having gluten allergies. The other half is just they're changing their lifestyle and they don't want gluten in their lifestyle anymore. And same with vegetarians. Tons of requests for vegetarian dishes. People that eat out a lot will go to a wedding and not order the beef. They'll order the vegetarian just because they eat so often, and they're going to another special event. They want a vegetarian course. So those are the things that keep us on our toes, keep us adventurous to come up with vegetarian dishes that are interesting and filling and satisfying. Actually, this month,
do people actually write on their weddings, like, do you have any food allergies? I mean, how it seems so detailed and kind of unglamorous in a way, right? Like, how do people?
Yeah, no, they don't ask on that. They don't ask on the invitation.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
Food allergy.
Somebody told me if I had a party, I should ask if anybody's allergies. Like, I didn't know how technical people get with these things.
For the weddings, it's not. But those who have allergies, they have no problem telling the bride that they have an allergy. And we find that the brides are happy that they did tell them because, you know, they're special enough to invite to the wedding. They're special enough to be taken care of that night. So, that's too much of a problem. Usually when we do send vegetarian dishes, we try to make them gluten-free anyways, just in case, you know, someone didn't want to say anything to the bride and they, you know, they pull the waiter over and say, you know, I'm gluten-free tonight. If you can just give me a plate of vegetables, that would be really great. And we're like, oh, no, no. You know, don't worry. You know, we'll take care of you and you'll be fed well this evening. So
that's good to know.
And one of the things that I admire greatly about your company and really the top companies in Chicago is the schedule that goes into, and most brides, and I certainly didn't realize it before I got into the being a wedding band leader, is the amount of hours that go into a day and the amount of work that goes into catering for an actual event. Maybe you can walk us through a typical day. Let's say it's a Saturday in June and you've got a wedding where the cocktails start at 6 o'clock. What time does your day start, or the people actually running that specific event? What does their death schedule look like?
Sure. The salesperson who's in charge of that particular event, if the party starts at 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, they'll be at the office between noon and 1 that afternoon and to review their paperwork. It's put together for them by the staffing office. It's put in a binder. They'll grab the binders. They'll review them, double-check, troubleshoot it, see if there's anything that they may have missed. If there is, they'll fix it then. And then the supervisor and the chef, who are both running that event, will come to the office. They have a, depending on, you know, how intricate the event is, they'll have a meeting from anywhere from a half hour to an hour to go over everything from the rentals to the linens to the timeline for the evening, to the menus, so on and so on and so on. They'll double-check their truck for the pack, make sure everything's there, and then they'll go to the venue. The salesperson will typically then hang back and finish up whatever they need to finish up. And they'll meet the staff there probably an hour into setup. So if the event starts at 6, typically we get there at 3 for setup. The salesperson probably gets there around 4, between 4 and 5, depending, you know, what the event is. And then they will stay, depending on the event, anywhere through hors d'oeuvres, through dessert, or through the end of the evening. So sometimes the salesperson's, you know, in the office at noon and they're getting home around 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. They might have to juggle multiple events. So, you know, they might go to one wedding and stay through the cocktail hour and then pop over to another one for the day and stay there a little bit later. So the time involved, as you know, David, on the catering end is crazy. They all work regular jobs during the week, you know, and they work into the evenings, and then on the weekends their days are extended. So it is a lot of work, but, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
we're cut from a different cloth.
It is really remarkable because I see people that are, you know, one minute they're serving appetizers during cocktails, the next minute they're, you know, they're serving drinks and they're doing all the, you know, moving chairs around, and it's just incredible. It seems like they're basically like sometimes 8-hour days, 8-9-hour days, and just the work ethic of Food for Thought is just incredible. Not only is it phenomenal food, but, you know, everybody is just super positive and super willing to do, you know, whatever it takes to make sure that everything is taken care of the right way. And along those lines, how do you guys judge when you consider an event to be successful, or maybe there were some things you needed to work on, but how do you say, yeah, this was what we consider to be a successful wedding? What's the criteria, in other words?
The criteria is the bride. If she's happy, you know, we're happy. We're super critical. I mean, there's a process that goes on, you know, every Monday morning where, you know, there's meetings that review how everything went that weekend, and we tear it apart. And, of course, we want to celebrate our victories and make sure those who did a great job are rewarded and acknowledged. But really, we're picking everything apart to see what we could have done better. So, you know, I don't want it to be a cop out, but really, as long as the bride's happy, we consider it a successful event. And then hopefully we can take away from it those places where we need to improve. Because I mean, you've seen us. There's so many moving parts that go on, from having to depend upon the rental company to be there on time to deliver the rentals and have the tables and chairs set up, to the photographer being on time, to the photographer not taking up too much time so that the food is cold. There's so many moving parts that at the end of the day, as long as the bride is happy, it was a successful event.
That's great.
There you go. This is really important. And it's also
good. Oh, sorry. What did you say?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, one of the things I also appreciate about you guys is certainly as a fellow vendor that works with you is that you guys really work well as far as like being really a part of the team and not like an independent. We just have our job to do. And that's why one of my biggest things is that every vendor at a particular wedding, whether you've worked with them before or not, really has to be as an incredible team that really, oh, if you need it, you know, like we played at this I won't say the specific name, but a golf club recently, and we were doing dancing between choruses, and we had the dance floor packed, and they were like, something was going on in the kitchen with the main chorus, so they're like, play two more songs. So we just kept going, and it really covered things with the server. We had a photographer who charging up his batteries, and so we played an extra song, or I delayed, you know, introducing somebody's toast. So the ability to really work well with all the vendors, and one of the biggest things, certainly for musicians and bands, is serving the vendor meals, and photographers and video people as well, serving the vendor meals in a timely fashion too, because sometimes some of the lower quality groups will bring out the vendor meal 2 minutes before you have to go on stage, you know.
Right.
And, of course, you got to make sure that you take care of the guests first, but it's important to make sure that the vendors are taken care of as well, and that helps the whole flow of the evening for everybody's benefit. So I really appreciate that about you guys.
Yeah. Well, we place that on our shoulders. I mean, that's part of the due diligence when we're planning with the bride is, you know, how would you like to take care of the vendors that evening? You know, we plan the meal accordingly with them. And then as soon as you guys get there, we immediately ask, okay, this is our timeline. Does it match with what you guys have? When's the best time for you to eat? You know, let's make sure that everybody's taken care of, whether it's between sets or before you go on stage or later in the evening. Everybody likes it a little bit differently. But, you know, it's just one of those little tiny things that nobody thinks of that is a big deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are the crazy, demanding bridal stories that are just, like, unrealistic?
Unrealistic?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So, In the old days, we had a bride who's the most important thing to her was to get married outside. That was it. The food, whatever. She just wanted to get married outside. And so, you know, we try to prepare her that, you know, this is why this is such a great venue for you, because it is as pretty as it gets. But if it doesn't cooperate, there is an equally pretty option inside. And she's like, well, it's not going to happen. It doesn't matter. Well, okay. It does matter, and I hope that makes you feel better about, you know, selecting that venue, and we're going to make sure that the ceremony is the most special part of the whole day for you. Well, you know, it's cloudy. it's going to rain. We don't want to set up outside. She is adamant. You are setting up outside. It's all I want today. It's all I want today. So we had to go. There was an event planner involved. We asked the event planner, can you please talk to her? It is going to be a disaster. The event planner could not talk her out of it. We went to the parents. The parents shrugged their shoulders. They said, well, give her what she wants. So, of course, as soon as she got down on the end of the aisle, the skies broke open and it poured and, you know, everybody ran inside and they had a stand-up ceremony in what was a lovely room, but the bride was soaking wet and she was miserable the rest of the day. So that was probably the most unrealistic request, you know, we ever faced, was in the face of inevitable disaster, we could not talk her out of the disaster.
Oh, that's
that
funny.
Happened.
As much as you'd like to think you can change the laws of nature, unfortunately, you're limited in some ways to what you can control there.
It was. I couldn't believe it happened, but there was nothing we could do.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, trust the people you hire. This is a good word of advice for anybody. Trust the people you hire and hire the people you trust, and then let them kind of, you know, they've done a lot of these weddings and they are only looking out for your best interest, I promise. So
yeah,
even though they may cost a little bit more than some of the average vendors, you will absolutely get every benefit from having somebody like that on your team. Having somebody like John who can really say that, well, here's an example of this, here's an example of that, and rely on their expertise. For all the guests that we have, it's really important that you listen to really what the things that they're explaining, some insights, because these people are absolute top-notch professionals, and they really do sincerely care about you as people, not just client numbers and username and passwords. And all the people on the show have been very carefully picked to have that same kind of philosophy. And the people that are really the top-level vendors are the people that are not about, you know, their giant egos and how fabulous they are. They're about giving you the absolute best results and doing whatever it takes to make that happen. And that's I think, is a very, very important thing for the wedding industry in general. And a big purpose for the show is to show you that the very top people are the people that care the most about you. And people that care about most about themselves, they can go on somebody else's show. But that's, I believe, about that weddings are about human beings and about everybody taking care of everybody. So I think we're getting close to the...
Yeah, most of you guys have businesses where you care a lot about people and provide value. So that's really good. Good insights.
Yeah. Your friends and your family love you an awful lot, but they don't play the saxophone. And they don't cook for 300 people, and they don't take pictures. So,
and you can't
hire people
you
that
can't,
know what they do. Yep.
And you can't fire Uncle Frank, right?
No, you can't. They're there for a lifetime.
You can't. So, exactly. Good. I know we're getting a little closer to the end here, but I just wanted to see, do you have any last-minute advice for couples in terms of really beginning their exploration into the world of catering? What are the first steps they should really put together before while they get started?
Ask for references. It seems like all the brides have friends who have been married or in the process of getting married, and while it's easy to research on the internet, and that's inevitable, you're going to do it, you know, ask your friends and family, ask for references, and narrow your list down to a chosen few before you go in and do your due diligence and go through the process of interviewing, you know, the band leader, interviewing a caterer, interviewing a photographer. You know, narrow it down. It's going to make your life infinitely easier. You're going to come away with much more qualified people to talk to, and the process is going to be much, much better. I think if you're selecting a caterer, make sure that you have the utmost confidence in them. You're going to be working with them for anywhere from 18 months to 6 months, and you want to trust them, you want to like them, you want to like their company, check how long they've been in business, you know, check their ratings on, you know, Yelp and all those types of things, although, you know, there's inevitably going to be somebody that doesn't like you. The numbers usually even out. So, you know, do your homework, Make sure you know what you want. Talk with each other, you know, before you talk with the your vendors as to what's most important for you that particular day. So if music's the most important, you know, ask the caterer for good referrals for music, or ask your band member for a good referral for a caterer, you know. But decide what's most important to you, because it is a lot of money you're spending, and you might as well put the money where it's most important to you. And we'll help you do that. We understand that not everybody's a foodie, and we'll help you, you know, manage your budget so it goes to where it's best spent. And so at the end of the day, you know, you get what you want because it's your day, and that's the way you should be happy going away.
Yeah, what a great business. Great. You're dealing with love all the time.
It is.
New
it's
beginning.
Nice.
Yes.
It's fun. It's fun.
Great. Well, thanks so much, John. And once again, we're speaking with John Rudy from Food for Thought Catering. They are based in Chicago, but they do throughout the entire Midwest regionally. And they do an incredible job. Take it from me. I've done numerous events for them, with them. And it's always a joy when I see Food for Thought as being the caterer. I can just completely relax and know that things are going to be taken care of. So their website is fftchicago.com. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about our music company, you can certainly explore our website, which is www.drsmusic.com. And be sure to tune in. We will have another guest next week. And hopefully next Thursday we'll have somebody fabulous for you. We have a few people we're working on the schedules for. So thank you so much to John. Ilana, great job as always. And thanks to all of you for listening. And keep tuning in and keep doing your homework and work with the absolute best vendors you can, and they will absolutely pay off for you. So thank you so much, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah,
and we look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, David.